This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is a podcast edition of Technogaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7pm, on 94.9 FM, or online at joy.org.au/listen live. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, melt, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, curl it, find it, view it, code it, jump and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pose it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch, update it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it,
bring it. Good evening and welcome to Technogaze, the show where we look into the past, observe the current, and gaze into the future of technology. My name is Mark Powney, and with me in the studio tonight, of course, is Paul Miguel. Hello, Paul.
Good evening, everyone.
And a guest appearance again from Jason Shaw. Hello, hello, Jason.
Good evening.
Tonight, we have we're doing a show on making calls over the net. We'll talk a bit about Skype to begin with, and then on to an interview with Dr. Stuart Koo, who is CEO of Friday.com, and that's over Skype. We'll actually have a competition for some Friday.com membership. We'll also talk about the history of online chat, which, of course, is the precursor to VoIP, or Voice over IP. We'll talk about the myriad of VoIP devices to choose from, and we'll go into a bit of the government regulation of the technology as well, and some cost comparisons of the VoIP services here in Australia. But first off, I thought we should start with some news.
Microsoft seems to be positioning Windows 7 Starter as its lowest cost Windows 7 option, mostly for the netbooks, as it and it should be available everywhere, not only in emerging markets as they had first announced. The biggest change that's being speculated is that Microsoft would remove the restriction that users can run no more than 3 programs at a time. The quote says, "We believe these changes will make Windows 7 Starter an even more attractive option for customers who want a small notebook PC for very basic tasks like browsing and web, checking email and personal productivity." Although Microsoft is lifting the 3 application limit, it notes that there are still a number of other differences between Starter and Home Premium, including the Starter's lack of Microsoft Windows 7's cool graphics, multiple monitors, Windows Media Center, or XP modes. Now, just a quick note on the Windows 7 Starter. It was really created to attack Linux. They're trying to make their break into the netbook market because they're usually lighter in the memory and space. Asus was one of the first ones to have Linux operating system, but now they got together with Microsoft and now they only have Windows operating system. So I think Linux lost out again, unfortunately.
Oh, well, one day, I'm sure.
Microsoft and rejoice. And 18 new Google Android mobile phones are expected to be released in the USA this year. And for those who are unfamiliar with Android, it's Google's entrance into software development for mobiles. It's a brand new platform. Android was created by the Open Handset Alliance, which is a group of 47 technology companies led by Google, who came together to really shift the game in mobile phone technology. And the goal was to create a brand new mobile phone platform, which would allow developers all over the world to create applications and invent new ways of harnessing mobile technology. So it sounds very, very similar to Apple's iPhone platform, which has proven to be very successful. So we can expect those in Australia within, I guess, 12 months.
I guess you could say it's the difference between the church and the bazaar. It's sort of the church is Apple and the bazaar is the Android phone.
Exactly, exactly.
Indeed. Speaking of another church, Microsoft have announced a new incarnation of its much maligned search service. It's called Bing. I would have had a sound effects for that, but I don't have one handy. The software giant has begun a marketing campaign in the United States, publicising the new features added to its search, which it now considers a decision engine as opposed to traditional search engine. From what I understand, the new features essentially are driven by the decision engine making assumptions on what it is you're searching for. For example, when you enter known airport codes, it assumes you're looking either for information on airfares or flight times. The launch date earmarked for Australia is next Wednesday, as in the one coming, June 3rd. At the moment, when you go to the Bing.com website, you end up with a search page that is customised for the United Kingdom. Oddly, I think. At this stage, Microsoft have been tight-lipped about the features it will offer to Australian customers, and one would assume they will be added to over time as agreements are struck with the people that own the data that they're looking to aggregate. One thing I've noticed, though, when doing a few like-for-like searches on Google and this new Bing site, the results beyond the decision engine components are just as mediocre as what the previous incarnations of Microsoft Search have been. So there's not much improvement there, I would say.
Hmm. And on the homepage of Bing, there's a massive image, which is a kind of a cardinal sin when it comes to search.
No, it's very pretty, isn't it, though?
It is.
But it has the option of Australia only.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh,
right.
Maybe it's improved since I checked it about 3 p.m.
Yeah, it's still beta, so who knows what they're doing with beta.
Yeah, they announced the start date as being June 3rd for Australia, so maybe they're just playing around.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Now, it was slightly related to the earlier story about Windows Starter 7, it seems that Dell is dropping its first generation Mini 9 netbook from its lineup. And it's actually a very popular netbook. They're only 8.9 inches screen size diagonally. And it was only 8 months since they've been released. Now, the only issue is that it's been removed from the Dell website in the US and some European countries, but it hasn't been dropped from dell.com.au. So you can still get them through here in Australia. And Harris Technology is selling them now at $100 cheaper and flagged as clearance sale, but Officeworks is still selling at the regular price, and Dell.com.au is still at the regular price. So it seems to be a bit in transition as to what's going to happen. But in the States, Dell has released the Mini 10, which is it's a bit more expensive, but it's got a faster, bigger drive, faster drive. But they also have the 10V, which is a light version of the 10. It's very confusing.
Yes.
Which is still more expensive than the 9. But I'm just surprised that they've dropped a model so soon after they started it.
Mm. Google have announced a new communications platform for the internet called Google Wave. Google is hoping their Wave product will reinvent the way people communicate. Google, who have large investments in email and instant messaging systems, have joined the two communication methods together, calling them Waves. Waves are a fusion of instant messaging, blogging, conferencing, email, and document sharing. The service will be available online and also via your mobile, so it'll be interesting to see if this becomes a Twitter killer. And in true Google style, this new platform is open to allow developers around the world to harness the new communication method they've invented to create new and exciting tools.
Yeah, the user interface I've seen from that, or the screenshots are quite amazing. I'm hoping to get access to that as soon as I can.
Yeah,
very good.
I think it's gone out to a few developers at the moment, but in terms of public release, I think it's probably a couple of months away yet. But
invite only, perhaps.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Well, just because it's Google doesn't mean it's going to succeed, because they've had a few failures.
True. That's very
okay.
True.
Yeah, I was reading the top 10 failures, but
I have to say there are innovation with Gmail and the conversation style emails. That's something that I really enjoy about Google, about Gmail myself. That's just me.
Well, we should explore that in the show, the different free emails and what you can do with them and how sophisticated they are.
Indeed. So, coming up next, we'll have an interview with Dr. Stuart Koo, who's CEO of Friday.com. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. Tonight, we're talking about all things phone-related on the net. So we're talking about voice over IP. We're also talking about Skype and how you can use them to talk to other people on the net. And we thought we'd give you a bit of background on what Skype actually is. If you're not aware, it's basically a piece of software you can download and install on your computer. It gives you a buddy list that you might be familiar with such applications such as MSN or iChat, all those kind of things. There's no need to worry about phone numbers. You can search for your friends' usernames or their own names on a Skype directory and find them that way. And that means that they can then become part of your buddy list and you can call them.
If they're on Skype as well.
That's right, yes. So yeah, okay. Skype also offers a service to call other phone numbers, like normal phone numbers, I guess, in various areas around the world. But that is a paid-for service that they offer that way. When you make a call, of course, on Skype, you need to have a set of speakers and a microphone plugged into your computer so that they can hear you and I guess you can hear them. And when you make a video call, you, of course, need a camera plugged into your computer, say a webcam or that sort of stuff. And sometimes a set of headphones works better because a pair of speakers sometimes echoes back at you when you're listening to someone else on the same call.
Yeah, because the microphone will pick up the sound from the speaker, and then you could probably end up with feedback as well, that high-pitched noise.
Yeah, usually I've found it's maybe half a second delay sometimes, so that tends to mean it's an actual echo as opposed to any sort of feedback. It's not quite quick enough to be a feedback effect.
Yeah, fair enough.
Mm. So you can get Skype for the iPhone and the iPod Touch, and we'll talk about that a little bit later because that's an interesting topic to discuss a bit further. And there's currently a version of Skype in development for BlackBerries as well. The BlackBerry Bold and the BlackBerry Curve devices are going to get a version of Skype. And just to prove that Skype is a valuable and working technology these days, we've actually got an interview, a pre-recorded interview, in fact, to demonstrate the way that it can be used. I interviewed Dr. Stuart Koo, who is CEO of Friday.com. That's FRIDAE.com. It's a media and services site for the gay and lesbian community up in the Southeast Asia region, but also for Australia as well. It seems to be becoming bigger. Stuart was located in Singapore, and we, of course, were located here in Melbourne. Tonight, we have via Skype Dr. Stuart Koo, CEO of Friday.com, a media and services company focusing on the GLBTIQ community of Asia. Welcome, Stuart.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for having me on the show.
No problem. Now, after a quick visit to your website, it's quite obvious that it's not just an online dating site. What exactly does your Wikipedia article mean when it describes it as a media and services site?
Well, I think Friday occupies the space between Facebook and a typical hookup site. Someone called this a social networking site before social networking was popular. And it came from someone who was actually the chief scientist of Amazon.com. So I think it was a pretty high praise to come from someone like that. And what makes us different really is that we actually focus a lot on journalism. In Asia, there's a dearth of gay and lesbian news and media outlets. We don't have gay press, and there's hardly any gay broadcasts, radio or TV. A lot of that's due to regulations in the different countries and censorship, but it's also because the communities in Asia are probably a little bit, a few years behind in terms of evolving. And, such media outlets just aren't available. So the internet has become a very important source of information for the communities in Asia. And we focus a lot of our resources on that, which very few other websites do.
Now, as you know, Joy is based in Melbourne, Australia, making up a large portion of our listenership. Do you cater to people as far south as Melbourne?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, we were very surprised to look at our stats and see that the numbers from Australia are rising more rapidly than any other country. Australia is now our number four country in terms of traffic, and I would say about half of that comes from Victoria. So it's we're not sure why. I think I do think that, you know, we do cater to a lot of Asians who are living overseas, as well as people who are interested in Asia, not just, you know, not just people living here, but what's happening around Asia. So definitely, I think we, again, like you said earlier, we're not just a dating site, we're something quite different. So I think we address a different need on the internet.
Perhaps it's a way for people connecting with other people in a way they feel comfortable with.
Well, I think people find that they make friends a lot easier on Friday. I think part of it's because of the way that we architect the site, and it influences the way people interact. But definitely, people tend not to just look for people who are living in their vicinity, but they communicate a lot with people who are living across the region. So I've had many people tell me that they've made friends from all over the world, all over the region through Friday.
I've had the pleasure of visiting Singapore about 2 years ago now, and the first thing that struck me is its slightly odd culture, a mix of modern technology but conservative thinking. Being a native of Singapore, who I understand regularly travels overseas, how do you reconcile these two aspects?
Well, I think Singapore is a small city. I mean, we've only got about 4 or 5 million people, but it's also a country. So I think the government, in trying to, you know, manage a country like that, has chosen to impose certain regulations and rules more strictly than you would find in larger countries, where there's probably more lively debate and more avenues for people to participate. However, having said that, Singapore is a great place for gay people to live. I mean, we've got people will be surprised to find that there are bars and saunas and actually a very lively community.
Now, you mentioned the government just before, the Singaporean government. Is censorship a problem in Singapore, particularly from a technology point of view? Are there internet filters, blacklists, that sort of thing in place?
No, not on the internet. In fact, we're in pretty close contact with the Media Development Authority, which is the governing body in Singapore. And they initially kept pretty close tabs on what we were doing, because, you know, we were falling in that gray area of what's possibly acceptable. But I think we have demonstrated that, if anything, we're pioneers in how we're using the technology. And, you know, we've been consulted a couple of times about new media. And we certainly work with the government in other areas such as public health and HIV and AIDS.
Right.
So no censorship in terms of for the internet. There is pretty strict censorship as far as broadcast media such as TV and radio and print media as well, but not the internet.
Okay. A couple of years ago, the term social networking was brought to the masses with the likes of Facebook and MySpace. And I think we discussed this before, but how do you define social networking? And how would you say the site fits into this definition?
I think social networking is about giving people the ability to network with, to make friends and to socialize. It's not just about hookups. Most people assume that when you're gay and you get on the web, all you're interested in is hooking up with somebody, and that's simply not true. There are many people who share common interests and who have lives other than sex, although that's hard to believe. And I think that on Friday we serve that need. So we've been keeping up with a lot of what's happening on the internet now with Facebook and Twitter and other forms of new media. So we've just launched a brand new version of our website. It's the sixth iteration in about 8 years. We were founded in 2001, and this is our sixth major upgrade. And that was actually it's been in development for about 18 months, and a lot of it's the result of one of your Melbourne natives. You know, we've hired a great developer from Melbourne. I believe he's done some work for Joy as well, and he's been phenomenal. I mean, he's put together a fantastic website, and we've got lots of new apps in the pipeline. We're very excited because user numbers have tripled in the last couple of weeks.
Wow!
And you know, it's a very exciting time for us.
This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9, and we're halfway through an interview with Dr. Stuart Coe, who is CEO of Friday.com.
Now, I understand, as you mentioned, in fact, the Friday has recently gone through a significant redevelopment. Can you tell us a bit more about the features introduced in this in the new version?
Well, I think just in terms of how we are displaying the information. For example, people now are able to access the entire archives of the messages that they've been exchanging with people. We've got new searches. We've got new ways for people to interact with each other. But not so much in... And of course, there's an entirely new user interface.
When you upgraded the site to the new design, you took some time migrating your users to the new site. I recall you used Twitter to keep your users informed of the progress. Do you find this an effective way to communicate to your users?
Well, it was a novel way of communicating to our users, and it was certainly something that was different because it was very real-time. I mean, the tweets are only 140 characters, and so you can only say so much. But what it is a very low-cost way of sending multiple messages out in a very short time to a lot of people. The fact that we don't have to serve these messages was a great thing. And the fact that a lot of people could be listening in on a hashtag, for example, you know, hash GAY. So they don't necessarily have to know about Friday to begin with. But we could broadcast messages out to people who were listening in on other searches. So definitely it was a very interesting new way for us to communicate to our users. And we could give them almost a live update of what was happening. And we could also get live feedback. So every time someone had something to say, they could let us know and we could respond almost immediately.
And I guess on top of that, you're also accessing a potential user base that may not have been previously aware of your site.
Absolutely. And I think Twitter hasn't had a very huge penetration in Asia yet. So we're really kind of pioneers in this region. I'm not sure what it is in Australia, but certainly I think the take-up is increasing. We went from 4 followers to, I think, over 500 in the first 2 days. You know, which many of those followers for Friday, we were the reason that they joined Twitter. I mean, they had zero other, they were following no other people when they followed Friday. So I think we were introducing a lot of new people to the service.
Yeah, have you got anything in mind at the moment that you might use ongoing?
Yes, we're looking at integrating Twitter into the main site in several ways. One way would be to integrate it with the personals profile so that people could actually, you know, you can actually read someone's tweets in their personal profile. The second way would be to integrate it with the main site where we could actually set a discussion agenda. So we could, for example, discuss gay marriage today and see what people have to say about it and listen in on what other people around the world have to say about that. So I think it's a different forum, it's a different way for people to converse with one another and with people they don't know. And they don't necessarily have to be from Friday or have to be on Friday. So I think it's a great way for Friday members to communicate with the outside world and vice versa.
For the technically inclined, what web platform does the site use?
Yes, it's all open source. It's LAMP. We're on PHP.
So being in an open source platform, what driving factors made you choose that platform over, say, a more proprietary environment?
Cost, I think, is the major was the major consideration. But also, we thought that it would be easier to find developers who were working on open source platforms. But in Singapore, most of the developers are actually trained or schooled in proprietary software. So a lot of them were on Windows and then Oracle, and there were very few people who were well-versed in open source. We had a much easier time looking overseas. India, Philippines, actually India still mostly Windows, and Australia. I mean, Australia became a surprising source of expertise for that, and I think we found Jason from, like I said, from Melbourne, and he's been excellent.
What types of features does Friday have compared to the features of similar sites more well-known here in Australia? For example, Manhunt, Gaydar, and Gay.com.
When you boil it down to what features they have aren't all that different. It's a, it's essentially a set of information about a user, which is stored in a database, and it's how we display that information when someone searches for them. Now, what makes Friday different is the tone of the website and what people use the website for. Many people have actually told us that they use different websites for different reasons, and I think the overall consensus is that Friday is really used to build genuine friendships and meet people for reasons other than sex. So, it's something that we didn't set out to engineer. We didn't engineer that. It's something that happened gradually over time. I think a lot of it has to do with, when you come onto Friday, there's discussions about politics, about current affairs, about what's happening in the activist world. People get to find out what's happening in the community, and they get to get involved, which I think sets a very different tone from finding out who's around the corner and available for a quick chat.
Well, thank you very much, Stuart, for spending the time and talking with us. It's been great talking to you.
Well, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Mark.
No worries. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. We just had an interview with Dr. Stuart Koo of Friday.com.
And Mark, he mentioned Jason from Melbourne. Who's Jason?
Well, Jason,
it's not the Jason here in the studio. That's Jason Shaw.
Jason Shaw. Different Jason was actually the one of the developers who put together the current joy.org.au website. So he helped out with the back-end work to get that up and running. In fact, before he moved up to Singapore and started working for Friday.
I see. So he used Joy as a platform to gain all his experience and then went to Singapore.
I think he would argue otherwise.
Probably.
We're doing a show on making calls over the internet. And, of course, that involves the technology called Voice over IP, or VoIP. That previous interview was actually done via Skype, which is a form of VoIP. And it just shows how good the quality, I guess, of a Skype call could be compared to a normal phone conversation, I guess you could say. Mm. Of course, so there's a bit of a history to VoIP, isn't there, Jason? There was a precursor, in fact, to VoIP, which was the chat mediums that were...
Yeah, that's right, and it kind of comes back to the whole instant messaging thing, and, as people's broadband connections have become better and the internet has become, more accessible, the text-based messaging has really turned into VoIP, which is audio, and then onto things like Skype, which is, video, of course.
Mm.
Yeah, so, I mean, instant messaging actually predates the internet, and it first appeared in the mid-1960s, actually, and as networks developed all over the world, so did instant messaging. And do you guys remember bulletin boards or BBSs?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I spent many a teenage night.
You're showing your age.
Well, that was from my comment. You don't remember them, Jason, do you?
Oh, of course not. No, of course not. No, never clue. They peaked during the 1980s, and some of them actually incorporated basic chat features. So that's really where it started. Mm. So as corporates got on board this platform, you know, they started inventing things like, and stop me if you know these, ICQ, yes. AOL Instant Messenger, CUCME was another one.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, and the likes of Excite, Microsoft, Yahoo, each developed their own one. Which, of course, meant that people had to download, you know, a client for each of these, and so you end up having about four or five of them on your computer at any one time.
Trying to make sense of it all, yeah.
Exactly, that's right. And so as the internet, you know, became faster, you know, the text-based services turned into audio and then onto video.
The natural progression, I guess.
Exactly.
Make the most out of that internet connection.
Mm.
Yeah. So I guess the next step was voice over IP, which is a term that was coined more when it became a technology that replaced, I would say, the phone, the typical phone. So as soon as they started creating devices that would sit on your desk, just like a normal phone would, that's when the term VoIP came out. It's actually based on an underlying technology called SIP, or Session Initiation Protocol. So if you're seeing that word out there, SIP, then that's just an underlying technology that VoIP uses, or VoIP devices use. And most broadband companies offer VoIP over a SIP service, so the likes of Internode and iiNet and all those ADSL providers will offer you, along with your ADSL connection, a SIP service as well, which is essentially your VoIP service. I guess you might be wondering what type of devices you can use for your VoIP service. One of them is just a plain ordinary USB phone. So you can plug in a USB phone, and it plugs into your computer. You require some software on the computer to actually receive and make calls, but the phone's button interface is quite similar to that of a typical old-style phone as well. So you've got, you know, your numbers, and it's a very straightforward dial the number, press the call button, and away you go. You can also get what are called analog telephone adapters, or ATAs. Now, they are a cheap device that lets you plug your old analog phone in and make and receive VoIP calls without much difference to actually using the phone. The only difference is, in fact, the way that it connects out to the outside world. So you end up using the phone just as you would have normally, but it's just got this little device hanging off it to plug it into your internet connection. You then, I guess, the next step up is the IP phone, and it connects directly to your SIP provider. So you don't need any software loaded onto your phone like you do onto your computer like you do with the USB phone, and it will allow you to dial directly from the phone itself.
And a lot of corporates use that kind of technology now, don't they? I think.
Yeah, they do. They use PBX systems sitting in the middle of it all, but it's essentially the same thing. It's a phone on the desk that connects to the PBX system as opposed to the ISP's SIP service, and essentially the same technology.
Yeah, it's called a DID number.
We're all about acronyms here.
It's I know.
A bit of an alphabet soup. What does DID stand for?
Oh, thanks.
Direct in dial or something like that? It sounds something.
It's what it does is, like, some services provide that, some don't. It allows you to have a PABX, another acronym, which is really the old. It's a trunk. It allows you. It's like the old reception desks when they had, you know, 20 lines coming into the desk, and, you know, the woman or the man answer the phone and then put you through the extension. So if you have one of those systems, like we do at work, then you need the ID, which is just a different way, but the technology is the same, where you're using the internet connection to do your calls. And then you have a five-digit internal number extension.
Yes.
And the four digits are the same for outside, but then there's a four digits, the first four digits are the same for people to call, like 9619 and then four digits.
Yep.
And if it's internal, it's one and the four digits.
Right.
So it's just slightly different from the old extensions.
I guess it's a way for the system to realize that you're dialing an internal number as opposed to an outside number.
Yes.
Yeah. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. We're talking about voice over IP, or in other words, making phone calls over the internet. We just had a winner of the competition we've got on at the moment, Philip from Blackburn. Congratulations, you've won 12 months of Friday Perks, a subscription to the website friday.com. Now, we did. We were in the middle of a bit of a discussion about the different devices you can use for voice over IP, and one of the things that one of the other types of devices we can use are cordless VoIP phones. Now, they're actually distinct from wireless VoIP phones. There is a slight difference. The VoIP phones use what's called a DECT technology to connect wirelessly to the base station. DECT, of course, stands for Digital Enhanced Cordless Telecommunications. There's also your wireless IP phones, which use your typical Wi-Fi wireless network that you might have set up at your home already. So if you've already got a wireless internet connection set up at your home, as in a Wi-Fi connection, you might want to choose going for a wireless IP phone as opposed to a cordless phone, which is an interesting distinction there.
Yes, but you have to make sure you have the right hardware for that, all that to work.
Yes.
Like from a usability point of view, there's no difference. Mm. You know, you still have a handset that's not attached to anything, but the technology is different and the quality of the call may make a difference. Because I would think with wireless, you know, if you have too many walls between you and the base, your call may not be as clear.
That's true, and I guess that brings us to the other thing, which is some pitfalls of voice over IP in general. Now, I guess one of the things that one of the biggest problems that people have is that it shares the rest of your internet connection. So, you if you have little internet bandwidth, or if you are using the bandwidth that heavily for other downloads and that sort of thing from your computer, your VoIP service will degrade or not work. It may in fact disconnect phone calls and during the middle of them. So it's a good idea to make sure you're not flooding your internet connection when using VoIP. And the other thing is that it relies on power, doesn't it, Paul?
Well, so it's not so much the power. Is that if you don't have access to the internet, you don't have a phone.
Yes.
So if the power goes out, so your computer goes out, or your router, then you don't you'd have a call, or if the router breaks down. And by the same token, yeah, if the power just goes out, you don't have any communication. So if you're concerned about security, and I'm sure most people are, at emergency time, you want to have at least a mobile phone as a backup. So if you're deciding to cut off your traditional phone line, make sure you at least you have a backup.
Indeed.
Because sometimes, you know, the power goes out, but you still have a phone connection.
Yeah. So there's, I guess there's the other side of this, which is the government side of this. There's certain regulations that are in place, aren't there, Paul, that...
Well, yes, we're not going to talk too much about them, because we want to talk a couple of the services that are available that you can subscribe to. Mm. But basically, ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, they regulate broadcasting, internet, radio communications, telecommunications, so anything to do with airwaves of some sort, they control that. And their website is acma.gov.au, which is full of information about radio and this communication. And the information they have there is more for providers of the service, not so much for the consumer. But basically, although we've been talking about all this technology, there are four types of services. Peer-to-peer, which means you can only, which is like Skype, the, I guess, naked Skype, if you want to call it that, where you can only call people who are using Skype, no phones involved, that's called peer-to-peer. Mm. VoIP out means you can call somebody, but they can't call you. And you have VoIP in, which is people can call you, but you can't call them.
So they've actually made this distinction, have they, in the
yes,
way they
have.
Regulate it?
That's, right. Yes, they have. And what they mean by in and out, it means calling to the public switch telephone network, which is a traditional phone, it's a PSTN.
Yes.
That's the other acronym. So you probably want to get a two-way, which allows you to make all sorts of calls, and obviously in both directions. Mm. The highlights of things that they have to look for is the emergency number, is that these providers, they have to provide free of charge emergency calls to 000 and 112, which is international mobile emergency numbers. So that somehow has to work. The other information is probably more technical, and they do have compliance and monitoring. So if you do have a problem with the provider, ACMA would be the place to go.
Now, there are a few service providers that provide VoIP, isn't there?
That's the big problem. I just went to one website called marketclarity.com.au.
Yes.
And they listed over 100 service providers.
Right.
Which makes it very hard, actually.
Not very clear. Yeah.
That's as clear as they got. And probably not everything, because they rely on actually the service providers sending them the information. So if there's somebody who's providing service but haven't communicated with Market Clarity, then I don't know about them. So I just picked five very quickly. There's worlddialpoints.net.au. If you're actually doing the outgoing only, there's no monthly fee. And the other ones are basically that FatFree Phone, INet, and Ace Communications, and Dragnet Connect. They're very similar in price. They're all around $10 a month. Except Fat Phone, they say they're the cheapest, but they're actually $30. And then you have prices per call, local, international, or STD, interstate. So basically, you just have to decide what you want, how you're going to use it, and just like any other phone plan, except you have more choices.
Excellent. Well, this has been a show on voice over IP technology, or making phone calls over the net. You've been listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. My name is Mark Pownie.
I'm Paul. See you next week.
Jason, see you next week.
Good night.
Bye.
This is a podcast edition of TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. In Melbourne, you can tune in on Monday night, 7 p.m. on 94.9 FM or online at joy.org.au/listenlive. For more information, visit joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.